Are you ready to dream on? Do you know how to fly high and soar among the clouds? Get ready to live adventurously, because the Laura Meeks Show starts now. Listen as Laura lifts you off the ground while teaching you how to fly high. Forget ground-level drama and be prepared to confront your dreams head-on as she encourages you to navigate towards your North Star and into what just might be the best life you've imagined. Dream on. Live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show.
Hey, this is Laura Meeks. Welcome to The Laura Meeks Show. It's high noon on the West Coast. Dream on, fly high, live adventurously. That's my tagline, and that is how I've lived my life. Now, I do know that some of you might find it a little uneasy to be sheltered in place here in this COVID environment. And in an effort to relieve some of that, my feeling is that you might want to try some new things that you can do around the house. And so I dreamed up this idea, since I'm writing a book, that I thought, well, why don't we talk about writing a book? And one of the things that I know, and I'm going to quote Einstein here, because I know my guest likes Einstein, so do I. Einstein said this: play is the highest form of research. And so while you're at home, I'm going to encourage you to use your mind. And one way to play with your mind is to write something down. And I can't think of anybody better to talk about writing than my brother, who is a writer. So who better to introduce than Christopher Meeks? I know him as Chris, my brother, but Christopher Meeks is an award-winning author and now, I like this, Chris. This came off of one of your sites. Descriptive writer whose style paints a clear picture of everyday life traumas. So I thought that, you know, there's a lot of print out there on you and what you write about. Chris has 5 novels and 2 collections of short stories. His latest is Benefits of Breathing, and it's his 3rd collection of short stories. This Benefits of Breathing just came out. So, Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Laura.
It's like old home week. It's like, hey, let's just have a conversation. And we'll just record this and share this with everybody. While I'm thinking about it, before I get too very far, I do want to thank Pat Baselli, who runs Transformation Talk Radio. That's how we get our word out, through Transformation Talk Radio. And one other note, this is a shout out to Diane, Diane in Virginia. I know you're listening, so great to have you listening onto the show. As we get started, just to lure our listeners in, Chris has decided to be very generous with his latest product, The Benefits of Breathing. There are 2 ways to absorb Chris in his writing. Traditionally, you had to buy the book or find the printed copy. But Chris has gone on an adventure, and he's created an audio version of this book. And Chris and I have talked a bunch since it came out. I find that the audio version is really outstanding. The wit and wisdom of Chris Meeks comes out in the audio. And at the break, at the half hour, we are going to offer 5 of you a chance to get a free listen of the audio book. So pay attention as we get close to the half hour, and I'll give you the information that you are going to need so that you can listen to the audio. So,
And I'm also going to give away 2 copies of the print book.
True, and we're going to do that at the end of the show.
Ooh, all right.
So if you want the print copy, you got to stick around to the end. So we're going to give the audios at the half, and we'll give the 2 print copies at the end of the show. There's a little different procedure, so that you need to hang out to do that. So with all of that said, so here we are, caught in this pandemic. And the world, it's interesting to me, because depending on how you look at the world, this could be the worst thing or the best thing that has ever happened. But general, most people are kind of grappling with what to do. And I do know that for some people, and me in particular, I'm taking this time off to write, Andy and I are writing our book, trying to get this out by the end of the year. So I wanted to talk to you, Chris, about writing. So here's my first question. How do you choose what you like to write about? Is that a curiosity? Is that a, you're sitting around thinking, God, I got a good idea. I think I'll write it. How does that strike you? And if you were a budding author, how would you go about picking a topic?
Well, I've taught a lot of creative writing classes at not only UCLA, but USC and Santa Monica College. So I've come to see that my students and other writers basically have two ways of choosing. One approach is how am I going to make a lot of money?
Everybody likes that one. How am I going to turn this into money?
Which one my most novice writers, that's a popular question for them. They're willing to write anything. Just tell me what to write so I can make a lot of money. Let me dispel you that very, very, very few writers make a lot of money. You know, you hear about best-selling authors, but you really have to sell a lot because most publishers pay a royalty of 6% of the cover price of the book. So if the cover price is $20, you're making, what's that, $1.20?
Yeah. So you have to sell a lot of $1.20s.
Yeah, if you sell a million books, then you're over $1 million. But the reality is most people are, I don't know if most, I think probably most, but there's traditional publishing and there's self-publishing. And then there's, I guess, in the middle, small independent publishers like my company. And the majority of people just don't sell a lot of books. The New York Times said the average number of books that are sold by a new author is between 50 and 100 copies. So you're not going to get a lot of money unless you sell each copy for $100,000, maybe.
Yeah. I got to sell one copy. Yeah. $1 million. That's just one.
But at any rate, going back to your question, if you're not writing for the marketplace, you're writing for yourself, that brings up a whole other idea. And what are you most passionate about? You know, it's for you, you're writing a story about your life. So you're passionate about that. You know, a memoir is one type of writing, and that's can be an interesting type of writing. I happen to find that the most truth comes in fiction. You know, what? I thought fiction's made up. But, you know, you've been in situations where you've witnessed something, a crash, say, and you know that any person witnessing that crash has a slightly different point of view. So what's the truth there? What's the reality? So if you're writing a memoir, it's as you remember it, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that you bring that up. One of my tenets of life is truth is what you believe. And yeah. I have a whole bunch of stories of how that came into my life when it's like you say, and I use that example a lot because it's in law, we think, hey, if you have a witness, a human witness to the car crash, that will give you the truth. You know, if they saw the robbery, that'll give you the truth. Yeah, we know from the lawyers that your worst information comes from human people watching because exactly what you said. You and I might be on opposite sides of the street and you might see the left guy hit the right guy and I might have saw the right guy hit the left guy. And we're honest to God believing ours is the real truth. And yeah. One of the things that I use in my seminars a lot is this. I have a beach ball. So beach balls have like six different colors on them. and I have two people hold the beach ball, and they're holding it between the two, and I say, so what color is the beach ball? And they say, you know, it's red, yellow, green. And the other person says, no, it's blue, green, white. It's like, so who's true? It's true for whoever is looking at their side of this thing. So that does bring up an interesting point in writing, is that whatever you're writing about, the truth is going to be your truth.
So I write fiction because there's the idea it's not really my life. The truth is on the page. Whatever you experience on the page is the truth before you. And even given that, you'll see, as I see in book reviews, such wildly different feelings of what's going on.
I know I read some of the Amazon reviews on this, and it's interesting because, like you say, it's like, did you all read the same book?
Yeah. And I just put an audio book on a place called netgalley.com, which I'll tell you about in a second. But people are listening to that audio book, which was done last October. And, you know, one reviewer, a woman, felt that the narrator was misogynistic. And it's like, what? Well, she said, kind of snarky. It's like, I don't know. It doesn't seem snarky to me. And you know, just how we hear the human voice. That I'm seeing such wildly different opinions in the audiobook of that book that it's like, wow, what's the truth there? Yeah. But, you know, here's another thing I did once just to bring a reality to my life as a writer, is I went onto Amazon, looked up The Great Gatsby, which most people would say is one of the most perfect books of all time. And say there's 5,000 reviews, but 100 of them are one stars, you know, maybe 200 or two stars.
And, I did not like The Great Gatsby.
And I looked at it, it's like, I don't know why people think this is a great book. It's really boring, you know, and well, you know, we can't agree on it. So when it comes to a book, if you, the author, can move someone to feel something and love it, that's my goal. That's my goal. I know that there are going to be people who don't love what I do, but if I can get the majority of people to really like what I do, hey, that's pretty damn good. So it gets back again to your question, what do you write about? I have to write about what I'm passionate about, because if someone's going to feel something, they have to feel passionate. And if I, the writer, am not passionate, they're not going to be passionate.
Well, let's dig into that for a second, because this is happening as Annie and I are writing. We have vastly different writing styles. And I think, like as you're explaining, that for me to be engaged in a book, what you're writing has to emotionally grab me somehow.
Yeah.
And I think one of the challenges that I see with other writers is they want to get the details right. So this happened, then that happened, then this happened. Oh, wait, no, that happened, then this happened. And to me, what happens is if it's all about getting the details right, first of all, most of the stuff that I think writers are writing about, they were the only people there. So how would I know if you got it right or wrong? And so this perception that you have to get it right becomes a challenge to writing. So and I find this when I'm just literally telling stories around the dinner table. It's like, whoa, wait a second, it wasn't a dark and stormy night. Well, like, hey, listen, for me, it was a dark and stormy night. You know, it adds flavor to what I'm talking about. And you know, I mean, who cares? So detail versus getting it right, passion. Let me say this. This is something that you wrote about yourself. You wrote your advice to writers: be interesting to yourself and you'll likely be interesting to others. Tell me about that.
Say that again.
Be interesting to yourself. So when you're writing, be interesting to yourself and you'll be likely interesting to others.
That is 100% true. And I learned the hard way. When when I was in grad school and I had to write my first novel, I just had the notion of what would sell. So I'm going to write.
I got to write
a kind of a mystery. And then I wrote an outline and then I just stuck to it, didn't veer from it. And I remember one day getting so bored that I had to go running. And it's like, well, once I get over this boring section, then it's going to get interesting. But then I realized if it's boring to me, it's going to be boring to the reader. In my mind, it's like, no, this is important. And that's one thing about new writers is they have all these facts they want to get in there. You have to realize that facts are what we call exposition. They don't move the story forward. Good details make it feel real, but too many details gets boring. And so the trick is to have a balance, whether you're writing a memoir, any other kind of nonfiction, or fiction. It all has to feel truthful. And yet too many details bog down. I happen to use in my children's literature class that I teach, where my students have to write a children's book. We read Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. And I point out to them that in chapter 7, the four houses of Hogwarts are introduced. And she only spends one paragraph on it. She could write for 15 pages probably on it. You have to read all 7 volumes to get all of the information on it. Just a little bit of exposition at a time does a lot. And it's turns in action or turns in realization that move a story forward. Same with your memoir that you're writing. The action that happens or the realization is like, oh, I like dressing in women's clothes. Hey, that becomes...
Look at this.
That becomes a realization.
Yeah.
And it changes your life. And if... It has to be transformative, which is like the name of this show. And
yeah.
But it has to happen throughout. It's when a character realizes something that moves the story forward, or when there's action that moves the story forward.
Yeah.
And that's the only thing I concentrate on in writing is where's the next turn, not where's the next chunk of facts. But you know, in a first draft, you have to give yourself permission to write a shitty first draft. Because, hey, you have all these details in your head and maybe you spend 5 pages on details. That can be edited later. Just go with the passion, because somewhere in that 5 pages is genius. You just have to keep the genius and throw the rest out. You don't want to throw the genius out with the bathwater, as it were.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting the way you're describing that, in that that's actually... what is happening to Annie and I as we're writing this. And at first we were trying to get it all kind of like final copy. And then I went, so I came down to my office and I just started banging out stuff. I looked at all the 1,000 things that have happened in our life and I picked one and I said, I'm just going to write on that. And I just started writing. And then I gave it, you know, I said, well, what do you think about this? And they said, well, you know, you're preachy and you're doing this and you're doing that. I was like, yeah, but how about this genius part in the middle? Isn't that really good? It's like, yeah, but the whole structure is like, nah, that's okay. Just for, so what we're learning is when if you were lucky enough to be chosen by me to read some of my writing, then the people that I choose are always told, here's what I'm looking for. I'm not looking for commas and paragraphs. This is not the final. I just want to see what in these 10 pages grabs you. What's the grabbing part? Because that's the part that, you know, I think these two parts really grab, but if you think this part's grabbing, then, well, hey, then I can incorporate that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I don't know, 80, 100 pages into the draft, and you're right, it is just a pile of stories and stuff that happened, but yeah. We know that, like you say, somewhere in there. So let's talk about this for just a second. Practicing writing. Practice, practice, practice. That's kind of the land. I'm a drummer, so I'd practice. Flying was all about practice. Talk to me about writing. Practice.
There's a lot of, especially beginning writers, who feel that they just have to wait for the muse, you know, that they'll just, you know,
feel it when it gets here.
When I feel it, I'm going to get to my keyboard and slam away. But my first mentor, he was a famous writer until he died, a guy named Tommy Thompson.
until he died.
He was on the bestseller list all the time. He did Blood and Money, a thing called Celebrity. And he just said, he goes to the same desk at the same time each day and things happen. He said, Hemingway, he gave the example of Hemingway. Hemingway would often end his day in the middle of a sentence. And then, so the next day he could start up. I tried that once. It's like, what was my second half of the line going to be?
And then what? I can't remember.
But it is true that if you make it a habit, that you're not spinning your wheels a lot. You're just like, oh, yeah, I remember. And then you just keep on going. And the idea in a first draft is not to keep polishing things like you said, the commas and stuff. That can be done later. That's the very last thing you do. The very last thing. Because you might throw out a whole chapter. Oh, why spend a month on making that chapter grammatically perfect when it's thrown out? And so.
Damn, all that work.
Yeah, all that work. So just push ahead. Make that shitty first draft. It doesn't have to be perfect. Shakespeare didn't make his first draft perfect. Hemingway didn't make his first draft perfect. Yeah. Why do you think you have to make a first draft perfect?
I don't know. I think it comes a lot with our schooling and the way that everything we're taught in this industrial learning scenario. Creativity in school. You know, I don't think we ever really did any creative writing. Maybe a little in high school, but college was really when I think you had more freedom to do stuff. Say, we're coming up on a break. So here's what, listeners, dear listeners, if you're here, here's how you get, we want to get this in before the break. If you would like to hear the benefits of breathing audio, this is how we're going to do it. We need you to email, so there's the book. We need you to email Chris, and his email is Chris Meeks, ChrisMeeks at gmail.com. ChrisMeeks@gmail.com. To get the audio, you need to put in the subject line, Laura Meeks Show. That's where you heard this. Laura Meeks Show - free audio. Laura Meeks Show - free audio. That way, you can get it. And again, I have to tell you that if you're listening to Chris now, when he's writing, I mean, this is the thing that's going into the book. And to me, the audio, it was very well done. The two people that do the reading did it very well. And the wit and wisdom comes out really well. So I encourage you to do that. As we go forward in the second half hour, there is a lot to talk about. I do want to talk more about some of your other writing too. And so when we come back, you've written 5 books and 3 short story compilations. There's a lot of work that you've done. I have some favorites that I want to talk about, and we'll continue talking about how to work on your masterful piece. If you're out there writing, or you have this idea that you want to write something, this is a great place to be. And I will also share with you Chris's website, which has tons and tons of great stuff on how to be a great writer. So we're going to take a quick break. This is Laura Meeks. I'm here with Chris Meeks, Christopher Meeks, author, and we will be right back.
Two Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Hi, this is Kimberly Carlson, and I would love for you to tune into All In Healing Radio, where together we will begin to experience health, happiness, and harmony in all areas and aspects of life. Join us every first Tuesday of the month at 11 a.m. on TransformationTalkRadio.com. All In Healing will help you release layers of negative beliefs and energies for radiant health, deep joy, and greater abundance. Visit me at KimberlyCarlson.com.
Are you ready to awaken to your divine and true potential? Tune into a spirited exchange radio with me, Carrie Kadambi, every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. We discuss the evolution of the modern mind and how the power of awakening, healing, and connecting allows us to step into living a life of love in action. For more information about me, visit thedivineguidancegift.com.
Get your goddess groove on with me, Laura Hosford. Tune in every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com, where I offer you authentic channel messages of love, inspiration, and heart-healing grace. Get your goddess groove on. When the goddess speaks, everyone listens. For more information, visit LauraHosford.com. That's LauraHosford.com.
Hey, welcome back. This is not exactly rock and roll, Zach.
Rocket, man.
This is Laura Meeks here on the Laura Meeks Show. We're coming back from break. When in the last half hour, we're talking with author Christopher Meeks in Transparency. Chris is related. He is my older brother and a great writer. And I thought no one better to talk about writing than Chris, because he's been doing it all his life and it's his passion. And Chris, I'm going to come in with this after the break. I read a bunch of reviews on Amazon. I got to tell you, I don't know if you remember this. There's some guy in there that wrote like
an essay,
a thesis. I mean, and he relates to Hermecules and Aristotle.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Like, wow, German. I can't believe anybody would. I'm hoping they'll write a review like
that. Yeah. That was like the review of the life of my lifetime, right? You know,
yeah,
comparing me to great writers throughout history, 2,000 years. It's like, whoa.
wow. But yeah. Down a little further was a guy that I kind of related to a little bit better. And this is what he wrote about, and this is kind of in relation to writing what you write about, how you choose to write about. And he said, so he was reviewing one of the essays that are short stories in your book is called A Warm Front Appears Moving from California Deep into Minnesota. That was the thing he was talking about. And he picked a quote out of that, and this was the quote. It was too much like Charlie Brown always running for the football of love. Now, I love that. Now, he goes on to say, after reading these 11 stories, after laughing and crying with the characters because of their pain was so real, I came to this statement by Mr. Meeks in the acknowledgments. So see if you can remember this. This isn't to say these stories aren't mostly autobiographical, which as somebody who knows you, I have background in a lot of the stories that you write. So I realize that a lot of what you write about is from your own life. And you've taken all the things that have happened in your life and turned them into really unique little stories. But he ended his quote with this, and it's kind of funny considering the election. He says, as Joe Biden would say, come on, man. I thought that was funny. So, and I brought that up mainly because a lot of what you write about are things that have happened to you in your life, and by using the emotion and the curiosity of why did that happen to me and how maybe that would be helpful to others, then you can turn those into different kinds of stories. Now, that being said, your brand new book is called The Benefits of Breathing. And on the break, you and I were chatting about, well, how did you come up with that title? So talk to me about The Benefits of Breathing, and that is actually also a story in the book, right?
Yeah. You said so much there. I have to go back a bit.
Okay.
Because what I want people to feel is that these stories are 100% autobiographical when they're not. It just feels so real, it has to be autobiography. Now, that story you brought up, A Warm Front, that took me over 20 years to write. I wrote it, I think 25, maybe even 30 years ago, the original draft. And it was the idea of, I was deeply in love with my girlfriend from Minnesota, and she moved in with me in California, and it wasn't working out. And we loved each other so much, but I was going to grad school. She went back home, and then we broke up after she went back. The idea was I was going to move back to Minnesota. I don't think I ever told you that.
I was going to move back.
Nah. And I felt so bad about that I thought, let me write the story from her point of view, not from me. But what is it like with her in Minnesota? And I came up with a draft of that. Then it didn't work. And then other things happened. And an example, my daughter Ellen was best friends with Keith Moon's granddaughter, Keith Moon from the Who. He died in his 30s. So she never knew her grandfather, but she certainly knows of the Who.
Yeah.
And when I learned about her mother was only 11 when Keith Moon died. Anyway, I got all these stories about her mother. And I thought, you know, I'm going to make Keith Moon's daughter essentially the essence of Keith Moon's, the mother in that story. So the mother's Scottish, right?
Scottish.
So that's a whole nother layer. That's not my story. That's another story layered in. But there's so much truth there that mother feels real. And it gave my main character a backstory that she'd been alcoholic, which my girlfriend had never been alcoholic, but it's now changed, you see?
Yeah.
The whole point is that stories have many layers to them, but they have to feel truthful, which brings us to the title story of this book, which I don't have to tell you, our father died earlier this year.
He died.
And you, and you oh, went and saw him.
Damn it. Damn
you and Annie went and visited him while he was at home in hospice. And I had visited too, and I'd learned from his point of view what it's like to be 91 and you're going downhill. And at some point, I thought that would be an interesting story to tell from his point of view. Is it 100% our father? Of course not. I'm not him.
I'm not in his brain.
But he gave me enough information that I felt so empathetic, I felt I could be him. I mean, this is what actors do. They become other people. This is what writers do, too. If you can be so empathetic, you become another person. And so I just wrote this story without thinking about where it's going. As I told Abby, our father's third wife, his widow. Originally, the story was called Ray of Sunshine, which I thought was ironic considering this is a guy dying. So I named him Ray.
See, it's interesting how that all these little puzzle pieces that you've got laid out on your desk is like, ooh, I'm going to pick Ray. Ray of Sunshine. Ray, I'll put that in the sunshine. It's like, oh.
Yeah, and you know, as you know, his house is in the middle of a vineyard. And so I'm certainly bringing my own experiences of visiting that house, what it looks like out the window. I worked with Dad in the fields. We were replacing the irrigation heads and things. Yeah. So I know a lot of these details. Again, before I could have the whole story full of details, but it's only giving enough details. And if it's okay, I'll read just the first page of the story.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this would be great. I think that'd give them an idea of what it's like.
I will say the title changed from the Ray of Sunshine to The Benefits of Breathing. When I was trying to name the book, and it was in a dream, literally in a dream, The Benefits of Breathing came up, and I knew I wanted an animal whose breath we could see, which I don't know if you can see this horse.
The horse. Yes.
The horse's breath is right there. So that's a metaphor, right, for us. So here's just one page. The benefits of breathing. Ray woke up smiling, which these days his wife thought unreasonable. After all, he'd been declining. He might feel lightheaded standing up from the couch, fall, and Julia's wife would come running in with her short gray hair flying. He'd say, no broken bones. I don't understand why, she said one night. Don't you think it's time for a cane? I'm a Midwesterner, he said. Strong bones for milk, and I don't feel old. This morning, still partly in a dream, Ray was golfing at St. Andrews in Scotland, his ball flying high over the rippled fairway in the golf course that had started golf, which is true. He'd been there.
Yeah,
he'd been with a client, Gordon Marks, whom he hadn't seen or thought of in years, and they gazed at the northerly bay, seagrass near the shore. Ray had been a successful stockbroker in San Francisco, head of the international department, but it was partly because he loved doing things with his clients, such as golfing in Scotland or attending an opera in Italy. He loved people. His dreams lately brought him an array of minor characters from his life, not his parents, not his three wives, not his three daughters, one from each marriage, but he saw such people as his golfer friend, the grumpy grocery lady from childhood in Vancouver, and the kid Mike, who wiped his bloody finger on his gym t-shirt, PE in eighth grade. Any rate, that's what Dad once told me, that he can't believe he's thinking of these minor people in his life, people he hadn't thought of in 50 years, 70 years.
Well, and you know, one of the things that you and I've talked about, and you know, this is part of the writing experience as well, is imagining, like you were saying, you know, you have your experience, and here's Dad, and part for the audience, you know, part of what happened. Annie, my wife, and I went up to see Dad, and Dad was really close to the end, probably a month before he died. And he would basically come out and lay on the couch and with his head on a pillow on one side, his feet up on the other side, and he'd basically sleep all day, except every once in a while he'd just like wake up. And you never knew when he woke up who he was or where he was. And it seemed at first it was kind of disorienting for us, because like one time he woke up and said, where's my fishing rod? And I'm like, Dad, you don't fish. He's like, and so I played along and I said, well, hey, it's over there by, over, it's just sitting over there by the fireplace. And he's just like, okay. And he falls asleep. But then he would wake up and be absolutely lucid for 10 minutes and talk about what's going on and then pass out. So it's interesting then to think about, okay, so if I was Dad laying on the couch and all these minor characters are coming to life, you know, then what is this last part of life about? You know, is that the review? Is that where you get to review all the things you've done? And we'll never know. I mean, honest to God, we can't get in his brain. All we know is what we experience from our side. And so part of what you're saying is that part of your building a story is building something from what you can gather as an observer.
Yeah. And that's the essence of the story, is what's this all mean? And then I came up with a meaning. And I wrote the original story, I don't know, a couple months before he died. We knew he was in hospice. But it's interesting, after he died, I looked at the story again. The book hadn't been, it was just in the process of being published. And I tweaked a few little things to match his death, but I was so damn close. It was like, whoa, that's scary.
Yeah.
And
we read it every year just to see if we're getting closer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now tell me, let's talk about this for a second, the power of stories. Why? I mean, you've spent your life writing stories. And the, one of the things that you've said today was that the important part is if you can, I'll paraphrase, can I get my experience to engage you? Can I share this thought, this emotion, this experience in a way that I'm transferring it from me to you? True. So why stories? Why are our stories important, and why do we need them? Why are people out there just itching to write their book?
Stories are in our DNA. We need stories to live. I feel I'm as important as a brain surgeon. You know, one of my original novels, it was too rough. It wasn't perfect, but it was my novel for my master's degree and my MFA. And it was about a Viking character in 980. But he was, the Vikings told stories, you know, the Icelandic sagas. I mean, they would sit around a campfire. I lived in Denmark. I visited what a Viking house looked like. It was just all straw. It gets so damn dark in Denmark in the winter. You just sit around a fire with your horses in the house and tell stories.
It keeps you warm.
Yeah, it kept warm. And these stories kept the Vikings going. We've always had stories because we only have this one life to live. And you can't make a mistake. We all do, but we learn from stories. It's like, oh, I better not do that. You know,
yeah, you see what happens. Don't put your finger in the light socket. It hurts.
Yes, exactly. And so I write stories because people can then feel the emotion in them and learn whatever their own truths are. You know, that's the other thing about stories, is you, the writer, have your own truth, but other people find other truths in them. And yeah, if you're just open to being as truthful as you can in your own stories, even your fiction stories, then you'll get at the heart of living. And I want people to feel that exactly what you're doing as a life coach, you can do this, you know?
Yeah.
You're just doing it from two different angles.
So, well, one of the things that you said, and I really want to riff on this, because I think this is absolutely true and it plays into our bigger society. You make the statement that I am as important as a brain surgeon. And I would agree. I would agree. You know, it's so funny growing up in an industrial era, and we start to think that everything is about production and making, you know, just your statement earlier on, people that are new writers is like, you know, and this happened to me in business as well. You know, what can I do that's going to sell and make me money? You know, I can be a plumber. You know, and when people start their own business, they're like, hey, what do you do? It's like, well, you know, I'm a life coach, but I can teach you this and I can work on computers and maybe I do a little plumbing, a little electrical work. So what do you need? I need to make some money. And that drive to make money has taken our society kind of away from the fact that there are other parts that are just as critical. You know, when they start cutting out daughters,
yeah, the arts are critical.
Yeah, I mean, daughter Shelley is an art history major, and she's all whack because they're cutting out art and gym and music and all these things. And we think, well, we don't need those. It's STEM. We need science and math. And, you know, that's what's going to move our country forward.
Right, as you're seeing, not everyone's following science here in the pandemic.
And
to some people, science is just hogwash.
Yeah, which doesn't that just talk about that for a second? Doesn't that blow you away? I mean, for a group of Americans that, you know, grew up with this scientific method, you know, my kids and I have a lot of discussion about religion and spirituality because I'm often in metaphysics land, and they're like, no, science. It's all about science. You can prove stuff or you can't prove stuff. But I think that's leaving out a huge piece, don't you?
Well, I always feel like God invented science for us to follow.
Well, and I, there's no doubt. I mean, in this pandemic, it's just, it's crazy to me that America has a force of people who are
freedom.
It's about freedom, and it's interesting because that intersects. I made a post on my website or on my Facebook site the other day. I said freedom is not being able to do whatever you choose, but choosing to do what's right. You know, just because you don't want to wear a mask, yes, you're free not to wear a mask. But we, you know, unless you're living on a remote island, we live in a culture. We live in a society. And what you do, if you wear a mask and I don't, I'm affecting others. And this is where the science, you know, the freedom intersects our society. In fact, somebody posted, and I thought this was kind of interesting. They said, we have the Statue of Liberty on the East Coast. We need to put the Statue of Responsibility on the West Coast. Because freedom is not just, I want to do whatever I want. I'm going to light a fire. I mean, and it's so funny because they, you know, on one side you have them saying, I believe in capitalism and businesses ought to have the right to say whether you can wear a shoe, shirt, and get service. But as soon as they said masks, they said, no, you can't say that. It's like, well, wait a second, which part do you like and which part don't you like? I mean, if you like freedom and capitalism, then we should be allowed to say you can't come in my store if you don't have a mask. That's not encroaching on your freedom. Yeah. That's my freedom as a capitalist. So I don't know. That's interesting. But to go back to writing, you know, I think stories are super critical to how we engage each other. And I will agree with you. I think that you're as important as a brain surgeon. We can't have a cohesive society. And it's like you say, the Vikings, you know, the stories have been with us since we were human. Yeah.
By the way, before this started, you were asking about maybe some of your listeners want to write and how do they go about it. And I would urge them, if you have the passion right now, just go write something. If you need to get the habit of it, then find a writing class. There's a lot of university extensions offering writing. UCLA Extension offers online, this is before COVID,
before
online
COVID.
Writing classes where people from all over the world take those classes. I happened to take some of those classes when I learned the only way I could get more money at Santa Monica College is if I took more classes in my subject. And so I said, if I went to UCLA Extension and took a novel writing class, you'd give me more money? And they said, yes. So so I took a class. I got two novels out of it, and I got a pay raise. And I discovered how fabulous those online classes are. And you get into the habit of writing. That's totally different from publishing. You first need something to publish. And it takes a lot of work to come up with a polished manuscript. And it's not going to happen with one class.
And now, talk to me about other venues. For instance, in this new world, blogging has become a sport.
And it's a great way to learn how to write. If you're blogging, you know, daily or weekly, you're writing. And a lot of reviewers now, by the way, are people who have literary websites. They review your book. So I hired a person to give me a virtual book tour, and my books go to a number of these people with websites where they read books or they interview people. So like I've been on those shows, and it's a whole new world out there. It's not.
And I have to say that it goes back to the thing we were talking about before, practice, practice, practice. It really does take a lot. Say, we're coming up on the end of the show. I know that is hard to believe, but before we go, I got to tell everybody how to get the free book. Because if you want the free book, if you want the printed copy, so there are two printed copies. If you want the printed copy, then you're going to email chrismeeks@gmail.com, chrismeeks@gmail.com. And in the subject line, you need to put Laura Meeks Show free book. Realize that if Chris is like everybody else, you get 600 emails and half of them go to junk. If you want him to find your email, then you have to have that in the subject line. Otherwise, it'll probably get blown away. We've got just about 60 seconds left. What do you tell the audience? What do you want them to know about you and your writing and how they can contact you?
Well, you can go to chrismeeks.com. That's my website. I have a lot of articles I've written about how to write, how to publish, what to think about, what to do, how to dance. No, that's not there.
Yeah.
I have a contact tab. You just can click on there. You can write me a question if you like. I'm happy to write you back. You know, again, I'm sure you say this. You can do this. You know,
you can do this. If you want to write a book, you can do this.
I'm now exercising. I have a personal trainer, and it's about doing it every week, a number of times a week. And it's very hard for me to do this, but I'm doing it daily.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to end with this. Thank you, Chris, for coming on the show. If you do need to get a hold of him, again, chrismeeks.com. There's a whole wealth of information. It does take practice. And if you want to connect to Chris, he's available. You just go and contact him at his email and or on his website. Chris, thank you so much for sharing your information with us today. And I look forward to my birthday presents.
They're on their way.
They're on the way. They're on Amazon. So that's it. That's it for Laura Meeks Show today. Thank you, audience, for being here. And we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks.
You've been listening to The Laura Meeks Show. Dream on, fly high, live adventurously on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you for tuning in. And we hope you'll join us next month as Laura helps you find your unique gifts so you can bring them to the world. For more information on Laura Meeks or to listen to past shows, visit her website at flyhighliving.com. Check out her hit Dream On 12-week course, where you get the personal attention you need to fly high in your new life.